Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
Taxi Driver's Tips by Barry Hill. I don't understand why taxi drivers like to blow their chance of a tip with me. I'm usually quite a generous tipper, but they will insist on doing stupid things that leave me no choice. I'll give you a classic instance. When I first started at university, I used to catch a taxi from the train station to the university. It wasn't far, but being blind, you know, I'm lazy. One morning, one of the drivers tried to charge me an extra pound for my guide dog. Now, I would probably have given him a pound tip, but because it is in contravention of the law to charge for assistance dogs, and both of us knew it, he blew his tip. Still, I bet his only mistake was to tell me that I had to pay an extra quid for the dog. It is likely that many other drivers have just put that extra on my fare without telling me. A few years ago, I went to visit a friend. Yes, I have a friend, called Dawn, who has a guide dog. At the time, I didn't have one. A dog, not a friend. Dawn ordered me a taxi to pick me up at her local train station, but 15 minutes later, I was still stood whistling Dixie. I rang the taxi company and was told that one had been and couldn't find me, so left again. That likely story comes straight from the taxi driver's manual of excuses. After half an hour, a taxi finally turned up. Of course, because they were used to picking up and taking a person with a guide dog to the house I was going to, and had been told to watch out for me as I am blind, they assumed I had a guide dog. None of the drivers wanted to pick me up. When the taxi eventually came, I insisted on a pizza ride, a freebie because I had been kept waiting for more than half an hour. I didn't get it, but he didn't get a tip either. Here's some more tips from the taxi driver's manual of excuses that I've had. When a blind person with a guide dog comes to your taxi rank, drive forwards a foot or two so that they can't find the door handle. If they are persistent and find the door handle despite your trick, lock the doors, and fingers crossed that they are not recording you on a body cam. When you arrive at a pickup to find the person who has ordered the taxi has a guide dog, simply drive away and don't think about the fact that you've just left a vulnerable person stranded with no idea that you've done so. You can always tell control back at base that I wasn't in. That'll work right up to the point when I ring up and ask where my taxi is. When arriving at a person's house to find that they have a guide dog, tell them that you have the wrong address. Drive a few doors down the road and then, after a minute or two, drive away. Still, I think the guide dog might even figure out that this one is as lame as a wonky. That's a three-legged donkey. When you turn up at a pub to pick up a fare and you find that they have a guide dog, tell them you're waiting for someone else. A word of caution, however. Don't try this last one when the blind person is with extended family who have been drinking for several hours. On this occasion, three taxis were called, one of them for me. They all came at about the same time, but mine flatly refused to take me with my dog. Interesting, I thought. We haven't had a good old-fashioned drunken family lynching in generations. As it happens, the driver was only mildly threatened and did begrudgingly take me in the end. Lucky that he changed his mind before my Uncle Roy got out of the pub. Lovely man, my Uncle Roy. But once a Royal Marine, always a hard bastard. The most popular course of action for a driver who sees me with a dog is to simply drive off. Okay, no unconvincing interaction. But if I don't see that a taxi has been and gone, well, I don't know that it's been and gone. How long do you leave it before calling back to ask where it is? On more than one occasion, I have rung for the absent taxi, only to be told it's been, couldn't find me, and went, as if it's my fault. If the driver can't see me stood outside my own house, then I think he needs my guide dog as much as I do. Irritating as these true accounts may be, they are not as bad as one that happened to a friend of mine. We'll call her Millicent. Mostly because I heard the name yesterday and I like it. Millicent is a guide dog user and had taken out a friend of hers for the first time since also losing her eyesight. When it came to home time, they rang for a taxi, and, as you have probably guessed, it turned up but refused to take the pair with a dog. The driver drove off, despite Millicent's insistence that it was against the law to discriminate against guide dog owners. Worse than that, he wouldn't even radio through for a replacement driver. Luckily for Millicent, a bystander saw what happened and gave the distraught pair a lift home. She also got the driver's number and he was taken to court. In court, he argued that there had been a misunderstanding due to his lack of English, but his excuse was thrown out and the driver rightly fined. He also lost his licence. Now, I've got to say I'm not happy that he lost his licence, but it was really his own fault. Guide dog owners have the Hamlet choice when it comes to ringing for a taxi, to be or not to be. That is, they can choose to let the control know that they be guide dog owner or not to be. Yeah, sorry about the mangling, such a classic bit of literature, but I wanted to shoehorn it in somehow. The bottom line is, do we let them know about the dog when we book? Well, there is always the third choice that leaves the dog looking mournfully at you from the upstairs window when you leave him behind. You can't see him or her doing it, but you can certainly feel that stare right in the back of your head. But what's the point in having a guide dog if it's not used? It'd be like having legs and shuffling to the taxi on your arse. If you were a wheelchair user, you would tell the taxi company about your assistive aid, the wheelchair. If you didn't and the driver refused to take you, that would still be discrimination against the person because of their wheelchair, for which the driver would get their arse kicked. But what if they had a genuine reason for not being able to take the wheelchair? Maybe it's a small car with a boot just big enough to take two bags of granny's shopping and or the driver has a bad back and a dicky ticker. This isn't stretching credibility much at all. So the wheelchair user would be best to tell the control that they have a wheelchair. What is so different about a guide dog owner doing likewise? The dog is a VI person's assistive aid. Well, if all things were honest and equal, telling the controller that I am indeed with dog is probably going to save some aggro down the line. At the very least, I mitigate the risk of a frosty driver who, on finding that I can't see where we are going, might be tempted to go the scenic route regardless. However, all things are not honest and equal. If they were, some of those MPs wouldn't have gone into politics. Altruism, my arse. And creepy Daryl would not have copped off with the girl I fancied at the youth club. Yes, it's polite to let the driver know that there's a guide dog, but when I called for two taxis for me and a friend who did not have a guide dog, theirs turned up straight away and mine took half an hour. Could it be that telling the controller just allows the discrimination to happen behind the scenes? It's not just this sort of direct discrimination that irks me. Drivers should learn that blind does not mean daft, and that we have other senses that we trust even if they don't. I will give you a for instance. Late one evening, I wanted to go to a mate's house who was also a night bird like me. I gave the driver the right address and, when we got there, he kindly helped me to the door. However, as we walked up the garden path, I brushed some privets on my left. Now, unless my mate had stolen these fully grown privets, or invented super-fast growing ones, I was at the wrong house and asked the driver to check. He insisted that it was right, so I got him to knock on the door whilst I stood back. Now, I'd like to say that the fellow who had to get out of bed to tell us that we had the wrong address invited it in for a warm Horlicks and a toasted currant tea cake. I'd like to, but it wouldn't be true. Instead, he made reference to fornication and assertions about the driver's intelligence and the legitimacy of his father. On another occasion, I caught a taxi home after a drink or three with my mates. I gave my address and asked if the driver knew where it was, as it can be a little confusing with names. He insisted that he knew, so I settled back, closed my eyes and enjoyed the usual white-knuckle night-time taxi ride. Now, there are several routes from town to my house, but I can pretty well follow each of them in my head by the bends in the road, even if they are taken on two wheels. When the car didn't lurch around a bend I knew it should have, I let the driver know that he'd gone the wrong way. Now this is, as usual for taxi drivers, he had, within 30 nanoseconds of me getting in, asked me if I could see anything. It's an odd question if you think about it. I mean, you wouldn't ask a person in a wheelchair if they could walk at all and how long they'd been in a wheelchair. Still, I'd had a few shandies, so I foolishly perhaps told him that I couldn't see anything. I think this set his mind to not believing me when I told him that he'd missed the turn. He took me to where he thought I lived, only to find that where he thought was terrace was actually road, about half a mile away. Credit to the guy, he did turn off his clock when he realised, but he blew his tip that night. Although not very pleasant for all concerned, most of these events were pretty harmless. However, there was another occasion that had repercussions. I do have a little sympathy for some drivers who are arsey with me and my dog. They know the law, so cannot refuse, and they are the next up for the job, so cannot refuse the controller dishing it up. I got in one last week like this. He was scared of dogs. Yep, even guide dogs. Yep, even though I said that they had to be bred to be placid. To tell me that he's scared of dogs every 30 seconds did start to jar on my understanding. I hit him with, "Do you think guide dogs would have dogs that bite?" And that didn't help. Oh, by the way, can anyone tell me how I'm supposed to keep my dog away from him, as he kept telling me to do, when it's sat in the footwell behind his bloody seat? Should I send a hatchback for a driver that doesn't think that guide dogs breed violent, rabid dogs out to owners? Still, not all taxi and private hire drivers are like this. I am happy to say that many are at least civil, and some are even helpful with my dog. As usual, it's the bad apples that give the rest a bad rep. Still, there does seem to be quite a few bad apples. I've been trying to resist because I think they're undercutting the honest drivers, but I think the only answer is going to be Uber. Let them try telling me that they have the wrong address when I have enough details of the driver on my iPhone to apply for a passport in their name. Thing is, though, that as a result of the constant, overt and low-level discrimination over the years, guide dog owners are expecting discrimination of some sort whenever they need a taxi or private hire. It's like an abused dog. When the abuse becomes habitual, the dog cringes even when it's not getting abused. I cringe whenever I call for a taxi. The result is that I'm reluctant to do so, which means that my life is curtailed. Instead of going about my business and leisure on a whim, I score the gain against the possible shitty feeling that even the possibility of discrimination brings. I doubt that there is any other discrimination that has such a pandemic effect. Coronavirus Blues by Barry Hill. I was going to post an amusing blog about wind, but there's the elephant in the room to address. Coronavirus. My wind? That can wait until next month. Bet you can't wait. My partner and I live in a little one-bedroom terrace. There's less to clean. We made a pact last week that if either of us catch the virus, then they get the bed and the other sleeps on the floor to be on hand for the other one. That, I believe, translates as dog's body. 2 metres away, of course. Personally, I think she's hedging her bets for her to get the bed to herself. She was laid off yesterday, so doesn't have the commitment to go to work. I reckon that if she coughs once or feels a little peaky, she's going to get to grips with the Alexa intercom system, will hibernate in her bed, not our bed, for the time that she is laid off work, and is probably measuring me up for a sleeping bag right now. This highlights one of the problems with the virus. How do you know you've got it until it's really coughing bits of lung up and frying an egg on your forehead obvious? On one hand, there's still the usual seasonal flus and colds making their annual rounds. Still, now that the snot monsters aren't at school, there won't be as much of these being passed from the little darlings to parents and from them to everyone else. One silver lining from this pandemic is that people might, just might, stop going to work, the pubs and cafes with a damned cold once the COVID-19 thing is over. Well, for a little while at least. On the other hand,
Keep up. There was one hand in the last paragraph. It's evident that we can have the damned virus with little or no symptoms. That's sneakier than the selfish pig following the cage with the restock of ready meals and taking all of them out of the fridge as quick as the staff are loading them in. It's because of its sneakiness that we are meticulously cleaning everything that comes into the house, from junk mail to the doggy's paws after a walk around the block. It's a big block, so a good walk. Like an anxious mother with her first baby. Okay, not all new mothers do the don't come near my baby until you've been through the decontamination chamber paranoia, but you do get some who want to wrap them up in surgical cotton wool. These are the same ones who, by the third child, are pretty much at the level of letting the dog lick the Farley's rusk off his face. This meticulous cleaning isn't to protect me as much as it is to protect my mum. She's got underlying conditions and is over 70, and we are getting their essentials in. Well, when I say we, I mean Angie, for as long as she's not decided to nest up. And when I say essentials, I'm not sure that lemon cheese is absolutely necessary. Actually, my ma and pa are being really good about it, but that's not entertaining enough for a blog. Hey, speaking of cleaning, what are you doing to time washing your hands for 20 seconds? Happy birthday twice? First verse of the national anthem? Rude limericks? Made up your own ditty? Me? I'm doing something really radical. I'm slowly counting to 20. I know, mad, eh? I have got a confession. I went to Tesco's on my own with Doggy last week. My usual methodology in there is to loiter near the cigarette lottery help desk counter, looking helpless, and the lovely staff call for a member of staff to help me do my shopping. I can do this loitering thing because most of the staff there know and love me. Well, in my head, they love me. Now, of course, this method breaks the 2 metres rule and is as dodgy as juggling with dynamite. Instead, I printed out a detailed shopping list and asked the prospective assistant to do my shopping for me. They were only too glad to do so. Gold star and extra toilet roll rations for the Tesco's staff. Why did I break curfew to go shopping? Well, I did try to do the online shopping thing, but those slots go quicker than ready meals. I tried playing the poor blind man card by ringing the various supermarket helplines. My phone went dead before the first one answered, so I plugged it into the charger and tried another, only to find that it was engaged all day and then closed. The next day I was ready for them. I found the telephone number of the CEO's office and got ready for the long haul. I plugged my mobile into the charger, got my talking book, laid on the bed and called hands-free. 3.5 hours I was on hold for. I could have gone on all day if it wasn't for the just irritating enough at first to soon become Chinese water torture hold music, interrupted by the ironic, "You're important to us," message every 30 seconds that reset the hold music to the beginning. In 3.5 hours, I figured that I listened to that message 420 times before screaming, "I give in, I tell you everything," and then hanging up. I learned about a government website that could give me priority online shopping slots at Sainsbury's. It's https://coronavirus-vulnerable-people.service.gov.uk/live-in-England. If you live in Scotland, Ireland or Wales, take no notice of the "do you live in England" bit of that link. It's just the first question. You go through 3 pages filling in details to register as vulnerable. On the 3rd page is a series of questions to determine if, in their view, you actually are vulnerable. By the end of it, I discovered that a miracle had happened since the virus kicked in. Most physically, mentally and all sensory disabled people are no longer vulnerable. It doesn't matter if you're incapable of going out to the shop, or the only way to do so puts you at risk of catching COVID-19. You ain't vulnerable. Okay, they are actually looking at extremely vulnerable, but personally, I think it is a ploy to cut down the disability benefit bill. Speaking of killing off the disabled people, did you see that NICE policy that they had to do a massive amendment to? The guidance for the NHS advised doctors on how to choose who gets life-saving intensive care treatment if critical care services are overwhelmed during a surge of patients with COVID-19. It originally included a frailty score that pretty much screwed disabled people, particularly those with severe mental health conditions like autism. But this is the National Institute for Clinical Excellence. Note that last word in the name. Rather Orwellian doublespeak, methinks. And for those who haven't read 1984, why not? It's an excellent book, and that's the proper use of the word. Doublespeak is a phrase that says one thing but means the opposite, such as the Ministry of Peace that deals with war, the Ministry of Truth with lies, the Ministry of Love with torture, and the Ministry of Plenty with starvation. Could Institute of Excellence deal with euthanasia? It's the same acronym. This NICE policy was about as excellent as the decision to put Michael Gove up there on the Friday evening briefing podium in place of Boris. I mean, could you get a more insincere party political broadcast opening statement? Did he actually answer any of the questions at the end? Thankfully, NICE have done a U-turn and now do not include severe mental health in their assessment recommendation. Maybe whoever made the decision to put Gove up there will do likewise. Right, I'm going to come down off my virtual podium now. Stay safe all, and best of luck with your shopping. Bah.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.